turn left at the next exit.
Are you using a travel app this summer? We have a cautionary tale.
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air.
I was lucky enough to book a trip to Martha's Vineyard off Cape Cod this summer, driving from Boston to the Cape to the ferry. Off-season, that's about 2 hours. Summer, we knew to double that. The Cape is separated from Massachusetts by a canal with two bridge crossings, one that takes traffic from Boston and further north, the other from the south, Rhode Island, New Jersey. A couple of miles before each bridge, you slow down and crawl, usually for about an hour, the price for entry to paradise. But on this day, we noticed tons of cars zipping past us on the shoulder, taking an exit. My nephew got on Google Maps. Hey, it's a shortcut. Let's go. So we did. Zipping along on a rural road, at one point crossing over the highway that feeds that second bridge, the Bourne Bridge. But hey, why drop down? We're cruising. Until we weren't. We came to a halt on a side road about a mile from the second bridge. It was 1:30. Our boat was at 4. Did I mention that the ferry reservations to Martha's Vineyard are sold out about a year in advance and that people would give up a firstborn before a ferry reservation? But hey, our travel app said just 30 minutes to the ferry. It was now 2, boat at 4. How bad could this be? Very. Mother Nature was calling, with no porta-johns. A fight broke out a couple cars up. 3 police cars came, sirens blaring. We begged them, get us out of here. No can do, they said. Then the lovely Sydney pulled up. A 20-something local, 3 hours late for work. Follow me, she said. I know a shortcut. Well, my nephew would have followed her anywhere, so off we went. Through a neighborhood where people appeared to be, what, waving? No, they were not. They were shaking a certain finger. I had the sickening feeling that as trapped as we were trapping them too, just as we ground to another complete stop. We were now closer to the bridge, but not moving at all, and this time in someone's neighborhood. It was 4 o'clock, we'd missed our boat. I reminded the nephew that with refugees around the world trying to get somewhere, ours was a very first world problem, but still decided to walk a half a mile or so to see what the problem was. Now, visualize a capital T. The top of the T was another backed-up side road, inching toward the entrance to the bridge. Few were letting them in. We were the stem of the T. No one was letting us in. So I began running back and forth, asking the top of the T, please just let one car in, and then running back to the stem, you're next. Between the Nissan Sport and the red pickup, you're in. Back and forth for 2 hours. The traffic started moving. My nephew soon pulled up. People had been giving him money out of gratitude. He should not have taken it. We gradually moved over the bridge, got to the ferry, where over 40 cars sat. We heard over 70 missed their reservations the night before. We got one of the few slots on the last boat, available only because some other poor slob was stuck in the same jam. I don't know what everyone else did. But total travel time? 12 hours. I blame myself for not sitting in traffic like everyone else, waiting my turn. But should I also blame the apps?
Turn left at the next street.
Shut up. Whole cities are trying to ban travel apps for what they're doing in neighborhoods. Let's bring in Professor Mark Hallenbeck, director of the Washington State Transportation Center at the University of Washington. He's in the studios of KUOW in Seattle. Professor, me? The app, where does the fault lie?
It's shared. If you want anything, it's the tragedy of the commons. It's everyone trying to make decisions for their own self-interest often winds up in causing harm to the public good.
Okay, well, I've already taken full responsibility for my self-interest. But I say that the fault really is in the apps. They don't work anymore because once everybody is going to the shortcut, it's not a shortcut anymore.
That's absolutely right. So welcome to traffic engineering. We used to call it the Wile E. Coyote theorem, which is basically the coyotes running along the mesas of New Mexico chasing the roadrunner, and they run off the edge of the cliff, and they're fine in midair till the coyote looks down. And as soon as the coyote looks down, psh, psh, there he goes, right? And so what happens is Waze or Google or whoever the apps look at the road and say, oh, this works fine. And they send you to places and volumes of traffic that are beyond what the road is meant to be. And then something goes wrong. In your case, it was the T intersection. It can be an accident. You create your own backup, and then the backup actually is its own bottleneck.
But then my colleague, Karen Miller-Metzen, drove to Canada. There was a 3-hour delay at the Vermont-Canada border. Waze backtracked her to another crossing so small that it was just a guy at a house with a gate that he lifted. She went through, saved 3 hours.
So do you like to gamble? What's happening in those two different situations were enough people wanted to take your cutoff on the way across a bridge that you blew out that road. And once it blows out, life is bad. Mm-hmm. And particularly on roads that aren't designed for high volume, they don't recover well. So you fell off the cliff. You're with the coyote and you went, and that's the way it's going to be. And she is the roadrunner. You know, things kept going. She could equally have had that same experience if 200 other people had followed her down those roads.
Or if it was a neighborhood. And this is where, I feel the guiltiest. You know, as you looked around and realized, oh my gosh, these people can't go to work. They can't leave their house, and they live there.
That's a huge problem with Waze and other apps like it. When you have a grid street system, when the main road breaks down, the apps, since they're just looking at data, they look at it and say, oh, you can go this way, and we send you in those directions. And the people who go there tend to be the most anxious and therefore the fastest drivers, and they drive through the neighborhoods, and the neighborhoods don't like this. So wars on apps take place. People in the neighborhood who are starting to be overrun with cut-through traffic invent accidents and post them on Waze to have Waze say, oh, there's an accident there. And then drivers quickly figure out that those accidents aren't real, and then Waze has to go out and block the people who are submitting false accidents. But the neighborhoods are saying, hey, this is a neighborhood. My kids are playing in the street. Don't drive through here. The drivers who are mad and being stuck in congestion are saying, it's a public road. I should be able to drive through there. And so then you wind up with cities building traffic circles and chicanes and other things in order to physically slow traffic down.
We're reading about these battles. In USA Today writes about Fremont, California, just north of San Jose. They've got big signs that they've put out. Don't trust your apps. Some of these cities are closing off the streets. You're not allowed to go during commuting times, for instance, down certain streets. In other cases, they are working with Waze.
So if you're working with Waze, and if they can, Waze can change the attributes of a particular road in order to indicate that it's slower than it is otherwise, to discourage people from taking a particular route. At the same time, there are the traditional traffic engineering things. As I said, you can put in traffic circles. If you're in Seattle, Seattle leads the nation in traffic circles to prevent people from driving through neighborhoods very quickly. And the speeds that people travel are slow. Waze, Google capture that slow data, and they say, wow, that road's pretty slow. We're not going to send you that way. It's better to sit on the main arterial, even though it's going to be three lights.
Yeah.
You also have cities fighting pass-through traffic. There's this conflict between the people and businesses who live in an area and the people who are trying to traverse that area to go to their own activities, which are on either side.
But there are unintended consequences in all of this. And in this case, I'm reading about a San Francisco neighborhood where the city spent, over a year, over $3 million, reconfigured an intersection. This is at Bosworth and Diamond Streets in Glen Park. Heavily used. It's got bikes, pedestrians, kids and parents going to an elementary school, the stop for buses, a BART subway stop. They widen the sidewalks. They put in a planted median, everything to slow it down and make it better. And as a result, people started using their mapping software and started going into the narrow streets that people lived on outside the intersection and avoided the intersection.
This is one of the great concerns of traffic engineering. The answer you want depends on who you are. Are you the person trying to drive through? Are you the person who lives along the street? Are you the person who lives next to that street? And so what you're going to find is that the traffic engineers who are trying to balance between what these different diverse groups want, which are often mutually exclusive, is they're trying to find a balance where they're trying to send the right amount of traffic in the right places at the right speed. The difficulty in the app world is the app world isn't part of that community discussion. Waze isn't in the room. and Waze's software, Google software, Apple software, pick your navigation software, they're running a giant international system. It's not tuned to what's happening in Fremont or what's happening in Westchester County. In some cases, it works really well. When it works really badly is when the volume overwhelms the alternative routes.
You have likened this to efforts to dam small streams.
Water, the water is going downhill, right? And you can try to dam it up, and that's fine so long as the dam is bigger than the backup of water you create. Waze works until you back it up beyond the levee, and then your city is swamped.
And you have the crazy lady at the base of the Bourne Bridge. Mark Hallenbeck, director of the Washington State Transportation Center at the University of Washington. Mark, professor, thanks so much.
No problem. Happy to help.
So, do you live on a block trying to block app traffic, or maybe do apps work for you? Let us know. We want to hear your story. Meanwhile, to those very nice people in that neighborhood in Bourne, Massachusetts on 4th of July weekend, I'm so sorry.